Ascent Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Commit and Deliver, on the front lines of management consulting by Cyrus Friedheim, narrated by Tom Parks. Preface. It was the fifth inning in Game 3 of the 1932 World Series at Wrigley Field in Chicago, with the score tied at 4-4. The great Babe Ruth of the New York Yankees came to bat, and the Cubs dugout and fans went wild, screaming and even throwing tomatoes at him. Ruth took two strikes, paused, and pointed his bat at the center field bleachers. On the next pitch, Ruth hit the most famous home run in baseball history to the back of the center field bleachers. He committed, and he delivered. In August 1981, almost 7 months after Ronald Reagan was inaugurated as the 40th President of the United States, the Air Traffic Controllers Union, PATCO, went on strike illegally. He told them publicly that the strike was illegal and that anyone remaining on strike in 48 hours would be fired. He repeated his order several times during the next 2 days. At the expiration of 48 hours, he fired the 11,000 controllers who remained on strike. In the interim, plans were put together to manage the nation's airways with supervisors, non-striking controllers, and military controllers, so the airline system operated safely with 80% capacity for the time it took to hire and train new controllers. PATCO was decertified, and the fired controllers were banned from working as controllers for life. No one ever doubted that President Reagan was a man of his word after that. He committed and delivered. While these are dramatic examples, they do illustrate the power of commit and deliver. It is a simple concept. You say you are going to do something, and you do it. You don't equivocate with either. The result? People will learn to believe you, to trust you. Bullies and opponents will fear you. Everyone will respect you and understand that your word is your bond and that you are a person on whom they can depend. While the concept is simple, execution is not so easy. The consequences of committing and not delivering can be serious in many ways, including damaging your reputation for reliability and trust, in addition to making a mess of things. Do not draw red lines or make big promises without knowing you are able to deliver and will. As in the case of President Reagan and PATCO, he had to be convinced of his legal right to fire the strikers and the feasibility of operating our airways safely without 11,000 PATCO controllers. Before you make a commitment, you need to do the research and planning necessary to know how you can deliver. No time for hunches, guesses, or shooting from the hip. A commitment is just that, a commitment. Who likes people who commit and deliver? In business, your boss, your board, your shareholders, your bankers, your suppliers, your unions, your partners, your subordinates, your teammates, your regulators, your community, and most important, your customers and clients. In your personal life, every member of your immediate and extended family, starting with your spouse, wants you to commit and deliver, as do your organizations, your clubs, your schoolmates, your teammates in sports, all those who depend on you. When is commit and deliver important to you? Always. Who doesn't like you to commit and deliver? Your competition, opponents, and critics. You will infuriate them. This book was written for anyone interested in learning how business is conducted from the perspectives of a management consultant, a CEO, and a member of the board of directors. Specifically, for teenagers who are wondering what the business world is like and are considering college, whether to go, which colleges to apply to, what to major in, whether to go full-time. College students who want practical context about the business world to augment their theoretical studies, who are as concerned about what kind of people they should become as what career path they should follow, who are deciding whether to change a major or school. Young adults who are considering career options, selecting the first career job, debating whether to go to graduate school, curious about management consulting, wondering whether they should accept unconventional assignments, making plans to accelerate their career progression. Mid-career professionals who are considering career changes, who may be stalled or bored or uncomfortable in their current situation, who are faced with a tough career-altering decision, who are wondering, is this all there is? Professionals nearing or starting retirement who are nervous about retiring, who wish to continue an active, involved, interesting life, who would rather wear out than rust out. Grandfathers who are considering writing their own stories. Introduction. Last year, Notes from Grandpa was printed and distributed to my family and a few friends. I wrote that book on my life and the lessons learned in response to my children, who told me, "Your young grandchildren will never get to know you, and they are interested." While I was writing the book, it became clear that my experiences as a management consultant, CEO, and board member gave me useful perspectives that would have been really helpful during my career journey of over 50 years. Commit and Deliver uses the framework of my career to explore how career and personal decisions can be prepared for and made, how to grow professionally, how to think through complex business problems from a practitioner's perspective. Much of my career was devoted to working with CEOs as a management consultant and as a board member to help them improve the direction and performance of their companies. I had the opportunity to live in several countries and work in multiple industries, which gave me an understanding of business in different cultures, forms of government, and economic systems. Most college students have little idea of career opportunities in business. I had almost none. All I knew was that I did not want to be a chemical engineer, even though I spent 4 years getting that degree. Fortunately, I discovered the world of business and decided to get an MBA following my 4 years in the Navy, an obligation in return for their financing my college education. Chapter 2 tracks my decision process that ultimately landed me at Booz Allen Hamilton. I hadn't even heard of management consulting while in college. This book gives a hands-on view of what consultants do, how they interact with their corporate clients, and what it takes to become a good consultant. It paints a picture of what life is like at the bottom of the business career ladder, what is expected, what you must bring to the table, and what it takes to move up the ladder in virtually any industry. In retrospect, I recognize that a number of issues over which you will have little or no control will impact your careers and will present great opportunities and major risks. This book discusses the turbulent times through which I lived and worked. Recognizing and understanding those issues that you will confront will enable you to navigate your career more successfully. Progress in almost all human endeavors is achieved by understanding and building on the past. Almost all major inventions and research breakthroughs are built on existing knowledge. The key to innovation is the ability to see what can be from today's technology, markets, and financial conditions. The business, political, technological, and social world that I experienced changed as much as any time in history. The rate of change that you will face will undoubtedly be even greater. An understanding of what happened in the last century is essential for you to prepare yourselves for the century you will experience. This book deals with the past through my experiences and observations, and identifies the major forces that I believe you must confront. Turbulence, chaos, and change create opportunities. A number of trends are already clear, though the direction and impact they will ultimately have on business are not clear. Your generation will take the controls and steer society. We know that globalization and the technology revolution are just gaining steam. A number of industries will be disrupted by new technologies and new strategies. I saw it happen in autos, telecommunications, energy, airlines, distribution, and newspapers. You will experience disruption in healthcare, education, transportation, energy, manufacturing, retail, distribution, and many more areas of your world. You will be faced with challenges to free market capitalism and social and political upheaval driven by increasing income disparity. Your workplace will be different, driven by shifting morals, ethics, and behavioral norms. As I was making final edits to this book, the coronavirus pandemic struck the world a devastating blow. Ways of conducting business will undoubtedly change, as will our everyday activities. An understanding of these forces will put you ahead of those who do not recognize how business will be changed by them. When you get frustrated, just remember that chaos is the breeding ground for opportunities. You can shape the future. Finally, I offer my perspectives on what's important and what's not, on how you should think about big decisions and new situations both in your professional careers and personal life. My assumption is that every reader of this book is rational and will act on his or her values, principles, and interests. You should take my suggestions and lessons learned, digest them, and then develop your own set of guideposts. My purpose is not to change your life, but rather to guide you to improve it. My life. First and foremost, I am a son, grandson, brother, husband, father, cousin, nephew, uncle, in-law, godfather, and grandfather. Shortly before he died, my father was telling me about his life, which started and was about to end on the south side of Chicago. He had achieved many things in his 80 years. He concluded with, "Son, in the end, you have your family. Nothing in life matters more. Outside of family, nothing really matters." Second, I am a businessman. For most of my career, an outside consultant helping companies make themselves better. Late in my career, I became CEO of two turnarounds. My stories should be read in the context of what was going on in the country and the world at the time. While I'm not a historian, and this isn't a history book, I'll provide some of that background. I've learned from every personal and business experience, and my aim is to pass many of those lessons on to you. Third, I am a member of communities, schools and teams, the military, the church, the cities I have called home, the companies I have worked with, the clubs I belonged to, the civic, business, and charitable organizations I served. I gathered many friends along the way and tried my best to be helpful, supportive, generous, and kind to everyone, particularly to those who weren't as fortunate. There were many companions on my journey, and their friendship has made my life fuller. A few important decisions chart our lives. Some can be planned, others not. Every person is dealt a unique hand to play in life, being born into different times and circumstances, and possessing different talents, personalities, interests, ambitions, appearances, and beliefs. Every person has challenges, some small, and some that appear insurmountable. To me, success in life is best measured not by what we achieve, but by whether and how obstacles are overcome. My heroes are those who have overcome major setbacks and risen from the ashes to achieve what they believed was important. Happiness does not come from the absence of challenges. Unhappy people are those who do not figure out how to overcome their own particular challenges, who consider themselves victims, or who give up. In my view, we all have the obligation to be as good as we can be. Nelson Mandela was in prison in solitary confinement unjustly for 27 years in his homeland of South Africa. Every morning he would say out loud, "I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul." He survived and became one of the greatest and most beloved leaders in history, ending apartheid in South Africa peacefully. Most would say that he was dealt an unfair, even impossible hand. Everyone should agree that he lived his life admirably and is a model for all of us as we measure the challenges we face. Early in life, we begin to judge people by characteristics we admire or value. Even at age 5, we are deciding what is important and what kind of person we want to be. As we get older, we refine and deepen our aspirations. Character and how others perceive us become important assets or liabilities, and it is work that we never finish. The kind of person we want to be will likely be the kind of person we will become. The challenge is to work at it constantly. Professions in life. Every profession in life is a trade. By profession, I mean anything you might want to become in life, whether in a career or in your personal and family life. Being a mother or a father is a profession, as are farm work, healthcare, teaching, programming, professional athletics, law, the priesthood, art, writing, carpentry, the military, and business of all sorts. We all start as beginners or apprentices at the bottom of the ladder. We go to school to build a foundation of values and basic skills that apply everywhere, like reading, writing, and math, and augment those with more career-specific education. We learn our craft over many years, working under the guidance of mentors and masters to build skills necessary in that profession. How expert we become depends mostly on how smart we are and hard we work. Having the best mentors and masters helps a lot. Focus is important. Few people become true masters of multiple crafts as Leonardo da Vinci did. This book describes my journey to become a master craftsman in business, where and how I developed the skills of my profession. The principles I learned apply to almost any profession you might choose. Along the way, I have tried to describe what a career in business looks like, something most know too little about, even when graduating from college. Today, college students know a lot about doctors or lawyers or teachers or architects or being a parent or many other professions, but know little about a career in business. Specific lessons about business are highlighted throughout the book. We are the sum of our choices. Sometimes we get do-overs, but usually not. Sometimes we work our hearts out and things don't go our way, and sometimes we just get lucky. This book describes my choices. The final chapter summarizes the most important lessons from my experiences. My times. My 8 decades saw a mix of economic bust and boom, devastating wars, a technology explosion that changed the way people live, social changes that tested and stretched firmly held values and behavior, political and economic revolutions, the spread of communism, devastating hunger and miraculous new medicines, the globalization of everything, spiritual upheavals, standards of living never before achieved on a massive scale, the rise and fall of nations, the advent of instantaneous communication to anyone, anywhere. This was the field on which I would play out my life. This period has been much like other periods of human history, as opposing philosophies and ambitious dictators strived to dominate. The technological innovations in communications, medicine, materials, and electronics have changed the way people live and interact. The pace of those changes and their impact on daily life are accelerating as the digital revolution permeates everything. It also appears that opposing philosophies and ambitious dictators will continue to ravage the world. Through it all, the United States of America has stood as a beacon of hope for peace and prosperity for all nations. Its strength and resources and spirit of liberty define America and its place in the world. Never lose faith in America, whether you live here or elsewhere. Put your values and energy into assuring that America retains its values and remains a force for good. I was a witness to it all and directly involved in the evolution of several industries, the impact of globalization, and the technology blizzard. In particular, my involvement gave me interesting insights into the dramatic developments of automobiles, telecommunications, oil, airlines, and newspapers, which are discussed in the book. My story. My purpose in telling these stories is to provide guidance to those who wish to go to college and follow professional business careers. I have benefited enormously from the counsel of people who preceded me, parents, teachers, bosses, mentors, and friends. I wish to pour everything I have learned into the minds of those who will listen so that they will have the wisdom of that experience to guide them. My experience and observations have made me believe that the capitalist system, despite its considerable problems, provides a better standard of living and way of life than any other economic system devised and tested over human history. Similarly, I believe that democracy holds more hope for a free and fulfilling life than any other political system. Both are under fire. I encourage you to become a student of economic and political history as you form your own philosophy of life. I hope you will also conclude that capitalism and democracy based on freedom and individual responsibility are the best hope for a brighter future. I encourage you to work to assure that capitalism and democracy deliver on their promise of a better life and equal opportunity and justice for all. This book begins in mid-career, when I was the partner in charge of Booz Allen's work with the board of Chrysler Corporation in 1979. Just prior to the historic government bailout of the failing automaker. Chapter 1 gives an understanding of the role management consultants can play in a major crisis. It is also a shameless attempt to get you excited about business at the top level. My role in the rescue of this iconic American manufacturer taught me lessons that stuck with me throughout the rest of my life. It's an important story, not all of which has ever been told. It's got drama, politicians, unions, the media, investment bankers, and consultants, and it's a fitting tale with which to begin this book. Enjoy the ride with me over the past 80 years, and be prepared to lead the changes in the next 80. Chapter 1. Chrysler on the Brink. At precisely 8:45 a.m. on a sunny Saturday in September 1979, five black SUVs pulled up to the entrances to three hotels in Washington, D.C. Each vehicle had a small crest of the Department of the Treasury of the United States on its front doors. Serious-looking men and women from Chrysler Corporation, Booz Allen Hamilton, and Salomon Brothers climbed in. As they approached the Department of the Treasury, they saw a crowd of over 100 journalists and camera crews attempting to enter the front entrance to the building. The SUVs wound around to a rear service entry. The Deputy Secretary of the Treasury met each vehicle and directed the people to the main conference room. The oil shock and recession that followed the fall of the Shah and establishment of the Islamic Republic of Iran in 1979 claimed many victims. Chrysler was on the verge of becoming one of the largest casualties. A few weeks earlier, my boss, Booz Allen Hamilton's chairman, Jim Farley, received a call from the U.S. Secretary of the Treasury, G. William Miller. Miller told Farley that the government had been asked by Chrysler for a large cash infusion to prevent bankruptcy. President Jimmy Carter was motivated to help, but not if Chrysler couldn't survive. Carter was facing re-election in 1980, and his advisors warned him that a Chrysler bankruptcy could result in tens of thousands of unemployed auto workers and suppliers. Miller and Farley had known each other from Miller's years as CEO of Textron. Miller had been confirmed as Secretary of the Treasury by the Senate a few weeks earlier after serving 2 years as chairman of the Federal Reserve Board. Miller told him that time was critical. The government wanted an answer within 2 weeks to one question. Was Chrysler's strategic plan viable? Specifically, if Chrysler received the funding the company requested, would it survive? Farley told Miller he would get right back to him. Jim Farley immediately called me to his office. I probably had the most auto experience of our senior partners. The question wasn't whether we would do it, but rather how. We called Richardson Dilworth, the Chrysler director to whom Miller had referred us, to get his understanding of the situation. Dilworth was the head of the Rockefeller family office, which tended to many Rockefeller investments. He was the family's designee on the Chrysler board and was also Chrysler's lead outside director. Dilworth's perspective was dire. Chrysler was sinking fast. Losses were mounting, and cash was running out. Dilworth pledged total cooperation and suggested we begin work immediately the next morning. His instructions from the Secretary of the Treasury were clear. Get Booz Allen. Chrysler was the weakest link in the U.S. auto industry and had neared bankruptcy in every recession since World War II. The 1979 recession hit Chrysler with a particularly weak lineup of cars against Ford, General Motors, and the surging Japanese carmakers. Chrysler was now hemorrhaging cash. I had just moved back to the U.S. from Europe. Farley and I discussed whom we could assemble quickly to contribute effectively to such a complex problem in such a short time. We were aware that this would be a highly visible project with considerable risks. We had to get it right, both for the client's sake and for the firm's reputation. We selected the best professionals without considering their availability. Farley used his considerable charm and got all to accept the challenge, starting immediately. Farley called Miller and told him we were on the case, but cautioned him that the amount of time was ridiculously short. Most of the team assembled in Chrysler's Auburn Hills, Michigan headquarters the following morning. We spent a couple of hours going over a work plan I had roughed out, assigning tasks and sharing the information each had gathered since our call yesterday. Everyone was familiar with Chrysler's situation because it had been the number one business story in the media all year. We spent the rest of the first 3 days talking to every top executive, except the CEO, John Ricardo, and the president, Lee Iacocca, collecting reports, financials, and everything we thought might be relevant. We met each evening in our hotel to discuss what we had learned and what further information and questions we needed to address. Salomon Brothers had also been retained to determine whether Chrysler's balance sheet and capital structure would be able to survive the declining cash and operating results. John Goodfriend, the CEO of Salomon, and Jim Wolfenson, a senior partner, led the Salomon effort. We worked closely with them. It became clear that there was no recovery plan. Like all automotive companies, they had a product plan, an annual budget, a facilities plan, a capital budget, a personnel plan, a marketing and sales plan, and many more. But there was nothing that melded all these important pieces into a single plan that laid out the steps necessary to pull Chrysler out of its nosedive and avoid bankruptcy. Nor was there a credible analysis that demonstrated how much cash was needed over what period of time. Farley and I called Dilworth with that unfortunate news. We could not judge the viability of the plan because there was no plan. Dilworth's incredible response was, "Well, Can you develop a plan? We responded, In 2 weeks? 3 days had already passed. Dilworth called Treasury.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?